Welcome to Season 8, Episode 34 of the Ubuntu Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be discussing Mark's new Steam controller. We'll also have some command line love. And we'll go over your feedback. I'm Martin, and joining me this week are Laura.
Hiya. Starting to feel a bit uncomfortable.
And Alan.
Hello, hello.
And the owner of the Steam controller, Mark.
Is that my, how people are going to introduce me now?
Yeah, yes. I'm going to get you a t-shirt printed and everything. Yeah.
At least you can code.
Oh yeah, at least I can code.
So, Mark, what have you been up to?
I've been cooking poppadoms. I found out this week.
For 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's all I've been doing. Now, I found out this week that if you buy uncooked poppadoms from the supermarket, instead of having to fry them and getting them covered in oil and fat and then waiting for them to dry off before you can eat them, you can just stick them in the microwave.
Mm. What?
I know.
Yeah.
Don't they cook unevenly so you end up with, like, uncooked bits?
No, not really. No, as long as you do them for long enough. Don't do them in one go.
And do you have to spray them with oil or something?
Just put them
on
a plate, put them in for about a minute, depending on your microwave.
Individually.
Yep.
And they puff up.
I sometimes
this is a revolution.
I know. And they come out and they're really crispy and nice.
Wow.
Yep. I thought everyone knew this.
No, I had no idea.
I'm stunned in silence. I usually fry them and then they're just a mess because they curl up and they wrap around the like fish slice thing that I'm trying to push them down with, and it's just a disaster.
But that's a brilliant image.
And I've been doing that for like 20 years. Thanks, Mark.
Slow learner. So, Alan, what have you been up to?
Not cooking poppadoms. That's what I've been doing. I've been using something called Twine. I played with this a long time ago, and I recently discovered that it's got a web version and a free software version. The version 2 that is now out is available for Windows, Mac, and Linux, and that you can use it in the web as well. Okay. And it's a thing that's used for creating interactive stories.
Ooh.
So you can create interactive fiction, you are stood in a forest, click here to go north,
click here
to go west, that kind of thing. But it's really stupidly easy to use. It's got like a graphical representation of each location with little arrows pointing to the next one.
Sweet.
So you can see like a visual representation of your play area, right? So it's usually used for games, but I've been using it for walking you through problem diagnosis. Because one of the problems say, for example, Ubuntu upgrades is sometimes they fail. And for a new user, it's very difficult for them to understand what's gone wrong and how to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also hard for the person supporting them to debug what's gone wrong and how to fix it. And so I started creating this little adventure where you press buttons on, is your screen black and is there a flashing cursor and do you get the desktop and, do your icons appear and all that kind of stuff. And you walk them through and then eventually get to the end of the game. And the end of the game is, here's the solution to fix your problem. You know, that kind of thing. And it could be used for anything, but I had a play with that and I wrote a blog post about it. We'll link to in the show notes. Cool. So that's what I've been doing.
Cool.
Laura?
I was hacking dinosaurs on the Isle of Wight.
What?
I know.
With a big knife?
Yes. No.
Was this at Black Gang Chine?
It was. So Black Gang Chine's quite an old amusement park at the south point of the Isle of Wight. And they have in one area a display where they have mechanical dinosaurs, which in itself is actually pretty good. And we got to have a go around it. But one of the things they found last year was we did actually interview Lucy Rogers a few
months
ago about this, I think. So last year the T-Rex broke down. And the parts had to come from China, so they hacked a Raspberry Pi into it. And so it had a Raspberry Pi controlling this T-Rex. And then gradually since then, over the past year, every time one of the dinosaurs broke down, instead of getting it with the official parts, they replaced it with a Raspberry Pi.
Nice.
And so this was the third time, the third six-month hackathon that they've been sort of trying to both getting ideas, but also just trying to implement it better and things. So I was invited to go along. I didn't actually get as far as hacking any dinosaurs, but I did learn a bit of JavaScript and how to use Node-RED.
Oh.
So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
How about you, Martin? What have you been up to?
I have been to the Egham Raspberry Jam. I think it was the 9th or something.
Tasty.
Or the 11th. Oh, yes, delicious. It was really good. It was there was some competitions running this time, an under-16s category and an over-16s category. I'm sorry, but the over-16s category, I can't remember who the winner was, but I'm sure it was fascinating. but the under-16 winner was a lad called Josh, who's 14, who had printed a multitude of things, including a gauntlet, all of the individual segments that then connected together to make a fully, you know, flexing gauntlet. But not only that, the printer that he was using was proprietary and didn't have Linux drivers until he wrote a Linux kernel driver for it. So consequently, I think he got all the votes in the under 16 category.
I feel suddenly very inadequate for this 14-year-old kid.
He was a really bright young man, a pleasure to meet. And then off the back of that, I've done the release for Ubuntu Mate 15.10, and then specifically the Raspberry Pi 2 version, where I spoke to a number of people at the Raspberry Pi Jam and have on subsequent visits about their experiences with it and getting their feedback and using their feedback to improve the new version. So, yeah.
Awesome. Excellent. Right. Should we get on with it?
Let's. Right, I'm going to talk a bit about the Steam controller.
What's a Steam controller, Mark?
You beat me to it.
So the Steam controller is a gamepad, like you...
What's that, Mark? What's a gamepad?
Well, okay, this is going to get old quickly, isn't it? A controller like you use for a games console, or like you can get for PCs in various
like
guises.
An Xbox-type
controller, GameCube controller, PlayStation controller, that kind of thing. But this is a new one released by Valve, who make the Steam platform and some games, which has been released to coincide with their Steam machines and Steam Link hardware. They were made available for pre-order a few months ago, and they go on general sale, I think, on the 10th of November, and the pre-order unit arrived at the end of last week. So the idea is that up until now, if you wanted to have a PC-based gaming platform to plug into your TV and have in your living room, you were kind of limited as to what games you could really play, because PC games generally tend to be designed with mouse and keyboard in mind, not with a controller. Now they've been increasingly going towards controller support, but some just, they rely on having a mouse pointer on the screen, and you can't really do that with a controller and have good accurate control. I've tried doing it with a Wii remote, but your arm gets really tired.
It's been the case for years that games that require you to point at things, you know, like I remember SimCity being ported to the Sinclair Spectrum, the original, or something like that, and you have to use cursor keys to move a pointer, and it just doesn't work very well. So how do they solve that on this controller?
Well, there's various things on the controller which are kind of it's like a best of all the controllers that have ever existed. So you've got bits which are kind of like an Xbox controller, bits that are kind of like a GameCube controller. But the real USP is that instead of having two analog sticks, which pretty much every controller for the past 10 years, except for the Wii, has had, is that it's got two touchpads, kind of like you get on a laptop, and they go under your thumbs. One... is sort of has a sort of embedded shape of a D-pad, and the other one is just flat, but both of them are complete touchpads which you can use both at once, and they're also,
so you can slide your fingers, your thumbs
across them, so you can use one of them as a mouse cursor, for example, or more. I'll come to that in a minute. And they're also both clickable, which is kind of funny. It takes a bit of getting used to. But yeah, kind of like you have clickable touchpads, although it feels a bit different.
A couple of questions on that. What's the sensitivity like, you know, the range of control that you've got on that? And when you say they're clickable, just one section's clickable, or
the whole pad clicks
bits
down?
Right.
So it can be, you can have two, you can have it where it'll only activate when you click it down, or it'll activate when you touch and when you click it down, or it only activates on touch. And the sensitivity is adjustable depending on the game and on the style of control. So the idea is that for each game, because each game is controlled in a different way, you can set up a different controller profile. And that means that these touchpads can be set up to be something else. So they can be an analog stick, or they can be a mouse, or they can be a trackball, or whatever it is that gives you the best control for that game.
So you don't just like plug it in and away you go, like you would with like a key. I mean, with a keyboard, you might redefine the keys, yeah, or whatever to whatever you're most familiar with. But you kind of have to go through that process for the controller for every game.
Kind of. It depends on the game. So yeah, there's a bit of basic setup to do at the beginning. You get a dongle, you plug it in, you turn your controller on, it connects to Steam, it updates the firmware if it needs to. There is a bit of extra stuff you need to do on Ubuntu at the moment. So I'm going to write a blog post, which I'll publish at the same time this show comes out, if anyone's wondering what you have to do. Once you know what to do, it takes about 5 minutes, but I was there for about 24 hours working out what was going on.
On that point,
yes.
In the Ubuntu 15.10 release notes, there's one line that simply reads, full support for the Steam controller out of the box.
Ah,
so Ubuntu 15.10 onward, you won't have any of those shenanigans. Right.
Fantastic.
And they might well backport it to other releases, yeah, as well. So if you wait, it may well be...
Yeah, it does just need... I think it just needs the Steam package to be updated. And it'll work. So then when you play a game, you do it in Steam Big Picture mode, which is their 10-foot interface, which fills the whole screen and is easily controllable with a control pad. You go to the game which you want to play, and you get... if it's got controller support anyway, you can just go in and play it. And basically then the controller emulates an Xbox 360 controller, which is the standard controller that PC games will support. And it's got all the same buttons in more or less the same places. And in that case, you use one analog stick as an analog stick and use the one of the pads as another analog stick. If it doesn't support controllers, you've got several options. You can use one of their sort of preset templates. So they have this gamepad template. They have a thing called gamepad with precision aim, where the it's exactly like the gamepad, except for the right pad is more like a trackball in terms of how it controls the cursor or the camera. And then if it doesn't support gamepads at all, it will map to a mouse and keyboard, the WASD keys for moving around, and the mouse for looking around, and then the buttons will bind to the sort of standard hotkeys for first person games. However, if none of those are suitable, you can either customize it completely, or you can, and that includes things like sensitivity, and you can use a button as a modifier for other buttons so they can have more than one function. But also there's community setups where you can see what other people have set theirs up as, or like,
oh, right.
So the developers could have a recommended setup for you, which you can just apply and then go and play.
So is it fairly straightforward for you to like browse those like communities? Are they rated, or so can you tell whether someone's community config is a good one?
There isn't a rating yet. I suspect that might come along soon. At the moment, you just have to sort of look at them and see which one you think is going to work for you, or try them out quickly. Because the other thing is you can change them in game as well. If you press the Steam button in the middle of the controller, it brings up an overlay and you can change the controls in game.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And have you found that compatibility, you know, sort of using it as an emulated Xbox 360 controller in games that only support the Xbox 360 controller?
I've tried it with... Hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I've tried it with 8 different games, some of which have controller support, some of which don't, and it works brilliantly in all of them.
Oh, well, that's an endorsement,
yes,
then, isn't it?
So I'll skip ahead a bit. I'll just talk about some of the games I've played. So I've played a first-person shooter game where it recommends that you use this precision aim with all of the other buttons as just normal touchpad controls. That works really well. it takes a bit of getting used to, because your aim is more sensitive than you're used to if you've used the control pad. But if you're used to using a mouse, it's as sensitive, so it makes a lot more sense. I've played some games which rely on having a cursor, so I've played real-time strategy and a point-and-click adventure and an isometric RPG.
In a game like, I don't know, like Minecraft, yep, or whatever, you'd use, where on a keyboard and mouse you'd use WASD, yes, for moving around, and you'd use the mouse for looking. Yes. Would you use the left stick, like the proper stick, for walking around and the touchpad for looking?
Exactly, yes. And that's one of the predefined setups. And then you just customize the other buttons to the key bindings, which you'd use
all the other
for
things.
Yeah,
right.
So it can be your mouse wheel, and it can be a, you know, open your inventory, close your inventory, open your crafting menu, that kind of thing.
Did any of the games not work particularly well? Any of them you had problems with?
No, I've not found one where it doesn't. I mean, the only slight problem with keyboard and mouse games is you've got a limited number of buttons on the controller, so you can only have so many key bindings. But it does kind of get around that, because you've got these two on the handles. You have two buttons which are under your two little fingers, you can configure it so that those act like modifiers. So if you've got your four A, B, X, Y buttons on the front, you could have it so that they do one thing when you're not using either of the grip buttons, one thing when you're also holding the left grip, and one thing when you're also holding the right grip, which gives you 12 instead of 4.
Right.
And whilst you've had good success,
yeah,
have you had to invest much time in getting them set up right? Has there been much tinkering?
There's been a bit of tinkering. I mean, I always end up doing a bit of tinkering with games, with control setups. Usually the first sort of couple of days of when I get a new game, I'm sort of tweaking things here and there, but then once it's set up, I'm good to go. So I've not really played enough with any of them to have a complete tinker with it all. But I mean, some of the games where you just use the controller setup, it's fine anyway.
So would you, are they, you said there's a dongle.
Yeah.
And that can just plug into a normal PC. And does the controller have rechargeable batteries, or is it recharging via mini USB?
It comes with batteries. You can also take rechargeable batteries, and it can plug in via a micro USB cable. I don't know if it can charge via USB as well. I've not tried that yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you also mentioned the Steam Link.
Yes.
Have you ordered one of those or not?
No,
yet?
Because I've got a full Steam box under my TV, so I don't really have the need for a Steam Link.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. So from my perspective, it's interesting to me, because my main PC yeah, is outside the lounge, mm-hmm, and I'd quite like something in the lounge to be able to play with the games that are on my PC. And, you know, I don't want to hulk a keyboard into the lounge, yeah, or anything stupid like that. And I was thinking maybe a Steam Link and a Steam controller, yeah, would be a good way to stream games from my desktop that's in the other room.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea as far as I'm concerned with my experience. I'll tell you what, one other thing which is really cool is it gives you tactile feedback on the analog controls and on the touchpads, which is really kind of hard to explain unless you've done it. So you've got an analog stick and two analog shoulder buttons, and you can configure it so that when they go past a certain threshold, it gives you a little bit of like haptic feedback, a little sort of clunk as you go over a threshold, at which point it activates. So if it's like turn left, move left, move right, you can have it so that there's a bit of a dead zone in the middle, then once you go over this point it starts to move. And similarly, the touch pads, as you move your thumb across them, they give you a bit of feedback, which kind of makes it feel like you're using a scroll wheel or a trackball.
Right, so it's like giving you feedback as if you had a physical, yes, button there, but it's not a physical button, yeah, it's just a donk from inside, yeah, the controller. Nice. Yeah.
And it doesn't always do it, it's configurable depending on your controller setup, but it's just a really nice little thing, and it makes a subtle but obvious noise when it does it as well, so it feels like you're doing something mechanical even when it's just a threshold.
So before you had this, what controller or control system did you use?
So I used a combination of, originally I used a GameCube controller, which was good because I really like the GameCube controller, except it only has one shoulder bumper, so it makes it difficult because you don't have enough buttons for what your game is expecting. I then went to an Xbox 360 controller for games with controller support, and I've also used a Wii controller for games where you need a pointer, and for games where neither of those will do, I've got a little keyboard and with a touchpad built in, which connects over a wireless dongle, which is okay for some games, but really isn't ideal.
So the key question then is would you drop all of those for this controller?
I already have. I've literally got no reason to use any of the other controllers now.
Well, that's achievement unlocked from Valve then, isn't it? That was the whole point, wasn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. I mean, it says on the box, play any of your PC games from your couch with the Steam controller, and that's exactly what they've done. I've not yet seen anything that makes me think they've not done exactly what they wanted to do.
So availability, you got yours on a pre-order that arrived last Friday. Yeah. Are they going to be available in stores or only available online?
No, I think they're going to be available in Game, I believe. I don't know what...
In the UK.
I don't know which other shops or in other countries, but yeah, they'll also be available from the Steam store.
And how much did you pay for yours to give us an indication?
I believe it was £40, and I think that's the retail price, which is comparable to other controllers. If you buy an official controller for a games console, that's the amount you tend to pay.
So certainly cheaper than having five other ones.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yes.
So the key metric I'm going to look for is how soon am I going to start seeing these in CEX and other secondhand shops, or are people just going to keep hold of them because they're that good?
I'll tell you what, I'm probably going to bring mine to Ogcamp and maybe do a little demo of it for a talk.
Cool.
Excellent.
If anyone wants to see and feel what it's like, as long as you wash your hands beforehand, I don't want sticky fingers.
Oh, you could bring some latex gloves, Mark, if you're going to get really hygienic.
No, velvet gloves.
Don't leave any dead food on it.
Oh, not the dead food again.
Should we move on?
Yes, let's.
Thanks, Mark.
Oh, am I doing Command Line Love as well?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, sorry.
That's what it says.
Okay. Well, in that case, it's time for some Command Line Love. And this week, we have one from Roger Light. He says, I might have mentioned my Command Line Love before, but it's so good and goes hand in hand with the Control R and the like that you were talking about. Bang dollar on the command line means the final item from the previous command line, which is something that comes up lots and lots. I use it every day. For example, make dir bob cd bang dollar. That's pretty trivial, but once you start using it, you'll use it all the time.
This is brilliant. I've never heard
a great little time saver. Neither have I.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing? You sit in front of this stuff for years and years and years, and then you're still learning.
Yeah, it's like learning how to microwave poppadom.
Oh, I tell you what, they
thank you.
They had some great ones on Linux Unplugged the other week.
Poppadoms?
No, not poppadoms. Command line hints.
Oh, the NCurses
and
stuff.
Yeah, they were talking about NCurses apps, and there was some really cool stuff that came up on there. Pipe cut sounds amazing. I still need to check that out.
Cool. All right. Let's move on. Thank you very much to Roger for that awesome little tidbit.
We love getting your feedback, so please send it to us. Even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh a little bit. If it's short, tweet us on @UbuntuPodcast. If it's less short, but please no essays, email us on show@ubuntupodcast.org. Or you can leave a comment on the relevant show notes on our website, ubuntupodcast.org. And now it's time for all that feedback you've sent in. So Chris Amos in Ottawa, Canada emailed in response to our discussion about the podcasts we listen to.
He says, I found the Jupiter Broadcasting Network about 4.5 years ago. Since then, I've been an avid consumer of TechSnap, BSD Now, The Faux Show, Tech Talk Today, Linux Action Show, and Linux Unplugged. Golly, that's a lot of shows. Linux Unplugged is where I first heard Alan and Martin. Hey! And subsequently followed them back to the Ubuntu podcast. They always come back. Listening to all of you has now sucked me far into the Linux world. While I'm still mainly a Windows sysadmin and gamer, 3 out of my 5 family PCs have now been installed with Martin's product that shall not be named. Well, it's a bit late now. It's already been...
It's release day. I'm allowed.
Yes. And there'll be some excuse next time as well. He also listens to, and he gives a list. I think we should add these to the show notes as well.
Yeah.
There's a few interesting ones that I'd never heard of, mostly from Canada land. We'll put links to those in the show notes. Thank you very much, Chris.
Torin Doyle also emailed us on show@ubuntupodcast.org to tell us his top 3 podcasts.
Number 1, Ubuntu Podcast. Number 2,
well, of course,
Mintcast. Number 3, Linux Luddites.
All excellent choices. Thank you,
totally good. And Nadri Magister left a comment on our website, which is, of course, ubuntupodcast.org.
Karen Sandler and Bradley M. Kuhn have a Free as in Freedom podcast. Bearing in mind that the main topics are law and policy, it's surprisingly not boring, at least to me. And we'll link to that podcast in the show notes.
Yep.
I've never listened to that one.
Yeah, they're both good. They're both good at giving talks, so it's not surprising they're both good at doing podcasts as well. Actually,
they organise the legal track at FOSDEM, I believe, or I think Bradley's been.
Yeah, I went into a few of their talks at FOSDEM, and Bradley's was excellent. I loved his talk. It was really good.
Cool. Ken Fallon of Hacker Public Radio podcast left us a comment too, and I should say that we love you, Ken. We omitted to list you in our podcast last week, and he was a little bit hurt by this, I think.
Van Washko from the Linux Link podcast maintains a list of current Linux podcasts over at thelinuxlink.net. Hacker Public Radio also has an ongoing series of podcast recommendations, and we'll link to that in the show notes. If any of your listeners are interested in becoming a podcaster themselves, then they're more than welcome to record their own podcast recommendations and post it on Hacker Public Radio.
Excellent. Cool.
Yeah, great.
And David left a comment too.
He says, for a good tech podcast, I would recommend Security Now at twit.tv with Steve Gibson.
I'm going to bite my tongue.
Yeah, me too. Moving on.
And harking back to our previous discussion about ad blocking, David also left a message on our website to say,
for ad blocking, I'm using AdBlock Plus and uBlock Origin. Both work well. I wonder if he's using them both together or is he using them different in separate places?
Is it going to be like those Windows machines you see that have got like 10 different antivirus packages and 20 different ad blockers?
Yeah. And Tori...
Yeah, I used to have a friend... Oh, sorry.
No, go on.
I used to have a friend that installed every firewall he could get on Windows, thinking it would make it more secure.
And Torin emailed about ad blocking too.
In Season 8, Episode 31, you talked about ad blockers. My favourite for years was AdBlock Plus, but I'm now using uBlock Origin by Raymond Hill, not to be confused with uBlock by Chris Adjudi on my second web browser, and may well swap completely to uBlock Origin soon. Now, I had a bit of a back and a forth with Torin about this, because I was using uBlock, not uBlock Origin. And as best as I can tell, uBlock Origin is the continuation and the original spirit of the project and is being actively maintained. And uBlock appears to have gone into bit rot, and that seemed to happen when Raymond Hill founded the uBlock Origin project. I'm now switched to uBlock Origin, and it works very well indeed. I can highly recommend it.
We also discussed backups in a recent show, and David left a comment for us.
He says, I use grsync to back up a lot of my files to an external hard drive. I also save my most important files in Dropbox, as well as saving them on a USB flash drive and to my netbook. So I have multiple backups of my most important files. This is fairly quick and easy to do, although I shall look into some of the things mentioned in this show. Yeah, I've heard a few people mention grsync. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah. And Will left a comment on our website.
I use GNU Sto and Git for version config files.
Hmm.
Yep.
Do you know what Sto is? I've not seen that.
No, I've not come across that.
That's just gone in my list of things to research. It sounds interesting.
Nadjumadster left a comment about smartphone security.
The modem inside the smartphone is a whole computer in itself that's running closed proprietary software. It's fully operational without the main CPU or the phone's OS. In many implementations, it can read and change main memory content without OS assistance or knowledge, and or subvert the kernel's trusted operations. And he links to a video that explains more detail about how this works, and he says in about 16 minutes and 45 seconds in, the video creator has an explanation of what additional hardware they have put into a Neo 900 to alleviate this issue. And then he goes on to say, technically, you can have a FLOSS modem implementation, however, it's next to impossible to receive blessing for selling, distributing, connecting those. It's almost universally true that the mere act of connecting a non-blessed modem to a network is punishable by law.
Right. That was a follow-up to our conversation about how Edward Snowden released files that said phones can... Yeah, indeed. Be broken up by third parties. Yeah,
and we hinted at the baseband. So we'll include a link to that video in the show notes. Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Ken Fallon left us a super geeky comment about a recent command line love.
Thanks for said N1P$P. I've been looking for something to do this for ages. This will be used daily, right up there with Control-R on the list of useful command line tools. And then he gave us a little function, which I think prints, thanks a million.
I was quite impressed.
You mean you didn't run this random code from a stranger on the internet?
It's code, and it must be open because I could read it, and therefore I can verify what its intentions are.
I could read it, and I could even compile it mentally, so I was quite impressed.
You guys need to get out.
Simon emailed us about our discussion of the recent VW emissions scandal.
Whenever something like the VW scandal happens, we're quick to shout, open source would have prevented this, but that's not going to be enough. You don't solve a social problem with better technology and more oversight. As long as there's a huge advantage to be gained, cheaters will always find a way, and they're just going to hide their stuff better. Sorry. A car manufacturer could still cheat if the engine control software was open sourced. For example, the hardware could be built to just pretend that it runs open source software when it actually runs a different version. So we do not only need open source software, but open hardware and the tools necessary to prove that the hardware was actually built to spec and has no hidden back doors. Mm. We haven't really achieved that for any computing device on the market. Our phones, laptops, desktops already contain loads of logic blocks where only the manufacturer knows what they're for. And there are most likely logic blocks that we will never know about because you would need a high-tech lab equipment and years of work to find them. The actual solution will be to remove the incentive instead, for example, by banning combustion engines entirely. You can't manipulate the emissions of an electric engine.
I was really liking that up until that last sentence.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either, but I can see where he's going with that.
Yeah.
Paul Carpenter emailed us.
I've listened to about 7 episodes. You guys have great chemistry.
And what about Laura?
I thought I included that. I don't usually include the ones that go, you're great.
The thousands and thousands of mails.
Yeah, you just don't know what we get.
That was the one we got this year.
Yeah, so yeah, I included that one.
It's the first one I've seen.
but I usually edited out all of longer emails as well. But that one I thought was quite nice because it suggests that the remote recording is working.
Yeah.
True.
It is.
Oh, that was good. Ridgewing left a comment on our website last show, but we forgot to mention it.
Why is there no Ubuntu podcast subreddit? So I created one. Whoop, now there is. /r Ubuntu podcast. Yeah. And I went there today or last week. I used to get so confused.
Straight to the illusion again.
Podcast. and I have posted something in there, so thank you very much for setting that up for us.
Cool.
Got in your DeLorean and went back a week and posted.
Yeah, that's right. I had to go back 2 days first, and then I got in my...
Awesome.
In fact, one of the things I saw at the Raspberry Jam was somebody made the time machine from Back to the Future with a Raspberry Pi, which is brilliant.
Awesome.
The flux capacitor.
Not the flux capacitor, the actual time control unit.
Oh, nice.
What, with the display? Cool. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's brilliant.
Yeah, and it probably worked because I was looking at games from 1985.
And next thing you knew, you're back in the 80s.
Awesome. Thank you, everyone, for your feedback.
Well, that's all for episode 34. We'll be back next week when we'll have more news, comment and discussion, possibly from Liverpool.
Ah.
Ooh. Ooh, road trip.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, road trip.
Oh, golly.
Should we record it?
Look, are we going to record stuff there?
I think so.
Or on the road trip itself?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we'll just like record constantly and do like video blog updates and stuff, or not.
Oh, just have Periscope on the whole time.
Everyone wants that. Everyone wants more of this. All the time.
No, they don't.
And on that
That's
note.
So right.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.